court is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning. Welcome to the November panel of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I am Mike Pirtle, current chief judge of the court, and I am pleased to be joined today on my right by Judge Francie Reedman and on my left by Judge Larry Welch. We have four cases this morning. We'll take them in the order that they were listed. I am recused on the fourth case, so Judge Welch will take over as presiding judge for that last case. I'm going to ask that you leave the mask on as you're sitting in the courtroom. When you approach for your argument, you may remove the mask during the argument, but then when the argument is concluded, please put it back on for the remainder of your time in the courtroom. We are audio recording. There is not video when we're not in Lincoln, so the audio recording will be on the Nebraska Supreme Court website after a few days, so it will be available for you. Also, if there's anything of a confidential nature in your case, just keep in mind that this is being recorded. You might want to use first names. So with that, we will proceed, and starting with the first case, which is Simpson versus Lincoln Public Schools. Council may approach. Again, this is Simpson versus Lincoln Public Schools. Good morning, Ms. Schifferman.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Joy Schiffer-Miller. I'm here representing Lynn Simpson, who was injured in the course and scope of her employment with Lincoln Public Schools. The evidence at trial showed that she was a paraeducator at the time, so she helped with disabled students and really with severely disabled students. She was strapping a student into what is called a stander so that this student who was a disabled paraplegic student could stand up for part of their learning experience. And a large metal tray fell down on Ms. Simpson's head, causing the injuries that bring us here today. After a trial in this case, the Workers' Compensation Court, through Judge Stein, found that Ms. Simpson was not entitled to hardly any temporary total disability benefits. He did find that she had an injury, a scheduled member loss to her eye, which I wish to discuss. And so that is what brings us here today. The first assignment of error I want to discuss is that I believe that the trial court erred in finding her cognitive deficits had resolved themselves by May 1st of 2018 and that she had returned to her baseline cognitive level. There was absolutely no evidence offered to say that she had any cognitive deficits before the injury that brought her before the court.
Hadn't she treated before for attention deficit?
She had treated before for attention deficit disorder, but there was no indication that it had any kind of effect on her word-finding ability, which she had after the incident, or that she had, you know, the severe problems with her memory and ability to function like she did after the accident. So I think just a mere indication that she had been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder does not indicate that she had a baseline cognitive problem.
Well, and was there not also evidence that she had complained, I think, is it to Dr. Beal? Was that her treating physician prior to?
She had talked to Dr. Beal about her attention deficit.
And she had problems in her work in being able to read to the children. Isn't that one of the things she complained about?
I don't recall that she had problems reading to the children. But she had trouble focusing, I think, is the fair read of that evidence. I don't believe that there's anything significant with regard to her cognitive problems. And then the other thing is that obviously she initially saw a eye doctor, because her first problems that the day after this incident was that she could not see well, and so she went to her eye doctor. Then later on, she talked to Lincoln Public Schools about more difficulties that she was having, and they encouraged her to go to Madonna. And when she went to Madonna Rehabilitation Center, or Madonna for treatment, she saw Dr. Kavka, and he kind of took over her treatment, and he farmed out various pieces to various people. Like she had to go to occupational therapy for the cognitive problems, and she had to go to physical therapy, had to go to vision therapy. And each of those people that he referred her to in the record shows that she did not complete and still had problems as a result of that injury, but that she stopped doing like occupational therapy because they said she'd reached maximum improvement sometime in February. And she stopped later after the, sometime in May or perhaps even June, that she stopped the vision therapy. There's really no question in the record, but she continued to suffer from these injuries. But Dr. Kavka said, well, she's released without restriction. And so the judge said, well, if she's released without restriction, you know, there's no impairment. The other thing that we allege as assignments of error is that I applied on her behalf to get an independent medical evaluation, and the judge found that there was no dispute between Dr. Beal and Dr. Kavka about whether or not no medical dispute to assign an independent medical evaluator. Well, clearly, Dr. Beal was saying this woman has cognitive problems. Dr. Kavka, on the other hand, was saying she's been released without restrictions. That was the only opinion he ever gave.
But Dr. Beal never, I mean, my understanding is the only evidence that was offered at that hearing for the IME that the court considered were the reports. There were three reports, two from Dr. Kavka and one from Dr. Beal.
That's true.
And Dr., as I read the judge's opinion, the problem that the court had with Dr. Beal is that he said the restrictions are permanent, but he didn't identify what those restrictions were or how they would affect her in the workplace.
I think if you read the letter as a whole, it identifies, I think one of the questions I presented to Dr. Beal was, does she still have these cognitive deficits and visual impairments? And he says yes, and he believed those to be permanent. So, I mean, I suppose it was the way it was worded. I looked at his past medical records, and those medical records were also in evidence, and they showed that he had found that she had those impairments. And so that evidence was also in the record. I think Dr. Kavka just simply said, well, she has no restrictions the whole time, even though the people that he had referred her to for occupational therapy, vision therapy, physical therapy even, would indicate that she had more serious problems to deal with, but that she still had deficits.
And the court interpreted those as symptoms that she was having without any correlation as to how that affects her in the workplace.
Yes, but I also would submit that the proper person to decide whether or not, I mean, once we have those, he can call them symptoms or limitations. I mean, it stemmed from the injury. I think it's irrelevant whether there's symptoms of her injury or a limitation. I would submit that then a voc rehab person could have determined what the effect in the workplace would be.
But that wasn't offered at the hearing on the IME. I agree with you that the trial testimony presents perhaps some more factual dispute between them. But if we look solely at what was offered at the IME hearing, we're limited.
But it's a chicken and an egg type of problem, Judge Redmond. I mean, you first have to you have to find that she's got limitations before you can give it over to the voc rehab person. And so I can't have a voc rehab person come in and say she's got limitations that will affect her in the workplace. Then also in my argument, we're addressing the average weekly wage and how that was determined given the weird circumstances where she works 9 months out of the year and she has her summers free to work in other jobs. But I'll leave that. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for argument for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel? Good morning.
Morning. May it please the court. My name is Josh Schauer. I represent the appellee, Lincoln Public Schools, in this matter. I think a lot of what this comes down to is just, as we so often see in these workers' compensation cases, an unsuccessful employee looking to relitigate the factual findings of the trial court judge. That certainly goes with regard to the alleged cognitive deficits. As court noted, there is evidence in the record, as cited by the trial court judge, that Ms. Simpson did in fact have some cognitive issues before the accident issue. And she is treated by the experts at Madonna for her purported head injuries or whatever those might be classified as. And Dr. Kafka very clearly stated that in May of 2018 that her cognitive deficits had resolved. The court noted that Dr. Beal, her treating family doctor, sort of deferred or would not override or disagree with Dr. Kafka's findings in that regard. He was expert in those kinds of injuries, and he determined without any real dispute or concern or issue that those matters had resolved in May of 2018. That's what the court found. That's what trial courts are there to do, to resolve those disputes and differences between experts, and that's exactly what they did, and there's no reason to overturn that finding of fact by the trial court.
Did Dr. Kafka have a baseline, though, for which he could determine she returned to?
If nothing else, it's when he first saw her and interviews her. I guess he determines what her baseline may be based on his interview, his determination, and look at prior records, I guess, what exactly he means by baseline. But whatever the case may be, he found that she was essentially symptom-free, that her cognitive deficits had resolved in early May of 2018. So I don't know that it's necessarily imperative to determine what her baseline was, but by May of 2018, he found that her cognitive issues had resolved, regardless of what they may be.
Is that consistent with the rehab specialist that he referred her to?
I'm not sure to what rehab
specialist. Well, like the vision people, yeah. OT people.
Yeah, as Ms. Schiffer-Miller indicated, Dr. Kafka was sort of the gatekeeper. He was in charge. He had access to all those records. He saw everything. And, you know, and it wasn't like that was any secret or surprise to him. Those were underneath him, for lack of a better word to put it. He was aware that he sent her to those therapies and reviewed them and determined that her cognitive issues had resolved in May of 2018. And with regard to the IME, I think, as the court noted, that was just based on the evidence presented at that hearing. And I think one way to look at it is they may not have been the same on everything. Their opinions weren't necessarily 100% in lockstep, but that's not the standard. There were no disagreements, as the court found, right? They maybe looked at things a little bit differently, but there were no disagreements such that an IME was necessary under Nebraska law. So again, the court considered the evidence that it had, made that factual determination after reviewing the opinions of the experts, and found that none was required. And again, that's not something that is subject to review or reversal here. I think, again, as the court noted, at most, maybe Dr. Beal pointed out some symptoms, but again, that's not what we're looking for in this workers' comp setting. We're looking for permanent restrictions, and there was simply no evidence, no dispute with regard to the lack of restrictions. With regard to scheduled member, again, there's sort of two issues there, and I don't know if they're necessarily properly before the court, but I'll go ahead and address them. Easiest one, I think, is that, hey, was it a 20% or was it a 9%? Again, that's simply a factual determination for the court to decide. There was some evidence of a 20%, then there was a later record where it was clarified that, no, it's actually a 0 to 9%. So that's certainly the factual determination that a court can make. With regard to whether it was a body as a whole or a scheduled member, again, there is sort of that evidence, that determination for the trial court to make. There was evidence from Dr. Bowl that we had a left eye injury. I believe it was stated in plaintiff's pretrial that they were asserting a indemnity or a rating to the plaintiff's left eye, and the court, based on the evidence, anywhere between the 0 to 9%, looked at that, considered, is it a body as a whole, is it a scheduled member, determined that it was a scheduled member, as it's right to do, based on its review of the expert determination, and then landed on that impairment rating for the scheduled member injury. With regard to average weekly wage, I think that's fairly straightforward. This is almost on all four with the Mueller case decided by the Supreme Court not too terribly long ago. The determination or the consideration is the plaintiff's actual wages for purposes of temporary total disability. And the undisputed evidence at trial was that Ms. Simpson's actual wages were what was put forth by Lincoln Public Schools for purposes of TTD, that to modify it or change it or expand or restrict it based on, hey, is she working 9 months? When did this injury occur? That doesn't tell the whole picture, that what we're looking for is what her actual wages were at the time of accident, at the time of the accident. That's what the court considered. And I think in line with Mueller, that's what the court determined for her average weekly wage for purposes of temporary total disability.
Well, did Mueller actually determine actual weekly wage? Didn't the Mueller court send it back to the compensation court?
It did, with the instruction that the consideration is actual wages. You're right, Your Honor. I did not actually sit down and say, here's how you calculate it. But it did, I think, pretty explicitly state that you don't just take the hourly rate times 40 for purposes of temporary total disability. You look at the actual wages that the person was earning at the time. And this incident did occur, obviously, during the work year. And I think to do what the appellant wants here, to take it the average rate times 40, would just line it up exactly with permanent wages. And obviously, there's a difference between permanent wages and temporary wages based on the statutory language. And again, to look at it or try to modify it based on, is she a 9-month employee? And quite honestly, I don't think there's any evidence in the record that she was a 9-month employee or anything other than to look at, based on the testimony of the person who adjusted her case, what was she actually earning at the time of the injury? And I think that's clear beyond any dispute, and that's what the trial court found.
Was she paid over a 9-month period, or was she being paid over the 12-month period?
I don't think there's any evidence to that effect in the record, Your Honor. So I think she was working less than 8 hours a day, so it was basically what she was, the hours she was working times her hourly rate, looking at the 5 days a week, and again, looking at what her actual pay was, regardless of what the paychecks were. They were looking at what was she getting paid in an average week in her work for Lincoln Public Schools. Then I think the last assignment of error, unless I'm missing something here, is with regard to temporary disability benefits, both permanent and potentially partial disability benefits. As I understand it, appellant's big argument there was the pay of wages in lieu of workers' compensation benefits. And again, I think the record was relatively clear that it was the policy of LPS during times of medical appointments and certain other times to pay the full wages for Ms. Simpson in lieu of workers' compensation benefits, and that's what they did. So she would actually receive more pay. The testimony of Ms. Cotton, I think we went through, I probably wasn't perfect, but I think looking back at the record we got there, we literally went through every day claimed in the pretrial by Ms. Simpson and were able to either establish that, one, she received indemnity benefits for those days, two, she was paid her full wages in lieu of workers' comp benefits on those days, or three, that there was no support in the record to show that the absence was related to the accident or injury at issue. So again, I think the record somewhat painstakingly, and I apologize for that, establishes that each day at issue was addressed in one of those three regards and that the court was proper in its determination of temporary benefits.
I want to go back to that IME issue for a second. So as I understand it from the trial, Dr. Kafka has a difference of opinion than Dr. Beal. Dr. Beal thinks that there may have been a permanent brain injury and Dr. Kafka thinks there was not. That's as it relates to the trial, not the IME.
I don't think so, Your Honor. Again, I don't know that there was any real evidence, additional evidence in that regard established or offered at trial by Dr. Beal. I think the record stands that he would defer to Dr. Kafka with regard to anything related to a brain injury or a TBI or concussion or anything like that. Again, there's nothing on the record from Dr. Beal to state that she had a permanent restriction or injury or anything like that.
Well, and then a restriction, though, is a different issue as to whether or not she has a permanent injury. You can have a permanent injury without a work restriction, and that's what I'm getting at.
Sure.
So in connection with the IME, was there evidence that Dr. Beal was talking about there's a permanent brain injury, and Dr. Kafka says, no, there's not? Or was that just limited to the issue of restrictions? That's my question.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it was both, Your Honor. Looking through that, I don't know. I think the only permanent thing that Dr. Beal identified was some symptoms. And again, I don't know that he ever identified a permanent injury or anything along those lines. And again, when it came to the determination, we're just weighing it where, again, I don't think that there was differences in the opinion between Dr. Beal and Dr. Kafka. I don't think there were disputes. There were some differences, but not disputes. And ultimately, the court deferred to the opinion of the PBI or brain expert from Madonna.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. How much time do we have for rebuttal?
1:33, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. First of all, with regard to whether it's a scheduled member disability or an eye injury, this clearly happened as a result of a thud on Ms. Simpson's head, and she had cobwebs. She described, and it's in the records, what her problems were with vision. She, in the records, it shows that it was kind of a processing issue, not an eye issue. There wasn't damage to the physical eye itself. And even the doctor that did the rating on her eye said she put it at 20% because she doesn't believe the visual acuity test that you usually rate an eye alone on was accurate in this case. And so I submit what she's talking about, and if you look at the other case law with head injuries, generally, you know, eye problems or processing issues are pretty standard with respect to these injuries.
That's but she didn't give her the 20%. She said that's what the AMA ratings would give her, but that's not how I rate.
Actually, it was backwards. I think she tried to say the visual acuity rating would have been the 9%, and so they talked her back down to the 9%. I mean, they had a 20% rating, and then a month later, go back to her and say, well, look, a year ago you told Ms. Schiffer-Miller it would be a 9% or under 10%. And so they talked her back down into that being 0 to 10% rating, under 10%. And so she said the visual acuity rating would go there. And so that's the distinction. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you.
I don't. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, judges.
Thank you both for being here. We will take the case under advisement. Thank you.